Today's guest is attorney Neil Kalin. He is with the California Association of Realtors. He focuses on all the forms that we use. He periodically comes up and speaks to the local Santa Barbara Association of Realtors. And he comes on the program once a year. He started, back around the year 2000, when he actually drove up, when I was live Saturday morning, and he drove up with his son, and he keeps coming back. I don't know why. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Neil Kalin.
Well, thank you, Mark. I don't know why either. I think it's because I have so much fun whenever I do your program.
You know, you came up with your son who drew a picture of me at the microphone. How old was he? I mean, was this 2000?
So if it was 2000, he was 4 years old.
He must have been older than he must have been. He might have been 6 or 7.
Okay, all right. That's about right. I was thinking we came up later when he was, you know, between 8 and 10. I was thinking, so that would be about right.
You know what? I mean, I should really try to. No, it would had to been before 2005.
Well, he was born in 1996, so there you go.
So he was the oldest he would have been was 9. He could have been 8 or 9. There you go. There you go.
Yep.
So you spoke at the Association of Realtors. You had my buddy Ed Fuller is a local realtor broker. He was very disappointed to get to see you. He thinks that you do an excellent job of explaining the morass of forms and documentation. Mm-hmm. And the crowd seemed to like you. During your talk, though, there was this one woman, as you were facing the crowd to the left, that she was trying to interrupt you, but you wanted to finish your point. Did you know her?
No, I did not.
It was kind of funny. You kept saying, no, wait a second, wait a second. And she kept talking. I thought we were going to have to remove her.
Well, I'm glad we got it under control when I was there live at your local association. You know, there's always somebody that just can't wait to get their point in, and sometimes I have to let them know, hold on, because I might actually address what you're going to ask about, you know, before you get your question out.
So, no, and you took a lot of questions, and it was great. We're going to dive into this big mess about this lawsuit settlement, and we're going to then be talking about these buyer-broker agreements, the forms, and we'll get into all that. But during your talk, you said you actually never wrote an offer because you're not a licensee. And I was thinking maybe when you retire, you should get your real estate license and you can impress clients and tell them you wrote all the forms. That you would be separated from all the other agents.
Well, I never wrote an offer as a licensee. I have purchased some properties. I've lived in my home for over 20 years. I had a few rental properties over the course of the years, but that's true. I never wrote an offer as a licensee. I'm a real estate attorney, but I am not a real estate licensee. And it's always interesting when I talk to a licensee and they start explaining the form, and I say, you know what? I know you probably have to do that for a lot of your clients. You don't really have to do that for me.
Well, give us... before we were going to talk about these new forms, buyer-broker agreements. They've been around forever, and a lot of brokers, a local guy, Mort Mazelis, he always had buyer-broker agreements. He thought very strongly about that, never did dual agency. But we got this big Association of Realtors settlement case with the Department of Justice, and ironically, there was an agreement between the DOJ and the National Association of Realtors months before Trump left office, and then as soon as the Biden administration came in, they rescinded that deal. What was that deal? Why did they rescind it? And was there any connection to today's settlement?
Right. So just a quick correction. The settlement that was just approved last week by the Federal District Court was not a settlement between NAR and the Department of Justice. It was a settlement between NAR and some private plaintiffs that brought a class action lawsuit against NAR, many of the largest brokerage companies and MLSs throughout the country.
And these attorneys were representing buyers and sellers?
No, they were just representing sellers. The sellers brought a class action lawsuit against NAR and various brokerage companies, saying that the sellers overpaid because of a system that NAR has in place that said, if you are going to take a seller's property and place it in the multiple listing service, you have to offer cooperation or you have to offer compensation to a buyer's agent, to an agent who brings in a buyer for the seller's property. And sellers say, well, so when we take a listing with you, real estate licensee, we're agreeing to pay the licensee a certain amount of money, and out of that money, the licensee, the listing broker, is going to offer to pay the buyer's broker. What this lawsuit said was, well, because you have to put that in to the MLS, it's an antitrust violation, and therefore buyer's brokers are charging more than they otherwise would have charged in an open marketplace. And since that money is all coming from us, the seller, we've overpaid. We've overpaid brokerage commissions. That was the essence of that lawsuit. But predating that lawsuit, going way back into 2020, NAR, the National Association of Realtors, reached an agreement with the Department of Justice that was concerned about a couple of practices that NAR had. One had to do with offering compensation, and the other had to do with requiring members to use the MLS if they were going to do any kind of public marketing of the property. There was a settlement agreement in 2020. Lo and behold, what also happened in 2020, there was an election, leadership changed nationally, and then in 2021, the Department of Justice, I think immediately after the installation of the new administration, said, we're not going to honor that agreement. That resulted in more litigation. But the Court of Appeals said, well, you know, guess what? The Department of Justice has the right to continue investigations if that's what they want.
Now, did that give fuel to the attorneys that eventually represented the sellers and NAR eventually settled the lawsuit with them, if not for that switch?
Well, that's a good comment, Mark. I don't know their motivation, but I think it sort of set the stage that that organized real estate is open to attack and that the government is going to be supportive of that kind of attack. And so there was a whole slew of class action lawsuits, but the first one that went to trial was one that went to trial in Missouri that resulted in a verdict against the real estate industry. That lawsuit where there was a jury verdict was ultimately settled. The verdict came out on Halloween of last year, and the settlement agreement was reached on March 15th. And does March 15th mean anything to you, Mark?
What is it?
It's the Ides of March. So a lot of people know March 15th. So the verdict came out on Halloween. The settlement came out on the Ides of March. And the result of the settlement, which was just confirmed by the Federal District Court last week, was that the brokers can no longer use the MLS to offer cooperation from the listing broker to the buyer's broker. So that means cooperation is really an item non grata anymore, right? So that's not going to happen anymore in California. There have to be separate agreements between a buyer and the buyer's licensee or the buyer's broker. Those agreements have to clearly identify the compensation that the buyer is agreeing to pay the buyer's broker. And according to the settlement terms, those agreements have to be made between the buyer and the buyer's broker before the broker shows any property to the buyer.
All right, let me stop you. My guest, Neil Kalin, California Association of Realtors attorney, back since 1987. I was licensed December 87, started 88. And he writes the forms. I thought this morning, Neil, could have had Barry Manilow's song, I Write the Songs, and we could have changed that to I Write the Forms.
I like it.
But let's go back. So thank you for correcting me. I knew that the settlement was between NAR and the attorneys. I said the settlement was between the DOJ, but the DOJ was doing something else. As you said, rescinded that one. Halloween, Ides of March, maybe this coming April 1st, no matter what the new DOJ comes in, they can't unring the bell. NAR has settled. One agent friend of mine was not happy with NAR. I felt that they could have been maybe stronger and held out for more. I don't know if anyone shares his opinion.
Well, Mark, there's a lot of people who share the opinion of, one of your colleagues. The trouble is the judgment that was rendered in that lawsuit that went to trial was just so large that it made appealing the judgment a practical impossibility. So the judgment that was rendered was for $1.78 billion. That's billion with a B, A, B, C, right? B. Under federal antitrust law, that could be tripled. So now you're talking about over $5 billion in potential damages. Except for, a country and maybe a few of the largest corporations in the world, nobody could post a bond to appeal that kind of judgment. So because of the enormity of the judgment, NAR was in, as a matter of practicality, they had to reach some kind of settlement. They just had to do it.
So if the agreement with the former DOJ in the Trump administration, if that had been maintained, and you mentioned that part of it was related to compensation, do you think the attorneys in Missouri still would have been able to have the ammunition to get the same result?
It is possible. I think when the Department of Justice rescinded the original agreement, they kind of sent a signal out, right? And that signal was picked up by these class action lawyers. Would there have been a different result? I don't know that for sure, right? But you've got to deal with the environment that they're in. And some people, looked at that and said, now is the time. The time is ripe. Let's do it. If there was a different circumstances, yes, there could have been a different result, but nobody knows that for sure.
All right, let me ask you this. Let's say someone's listening and they're thinking, but you know what? These commissions, they are too high. I like this idea. We're changing things. But to that, I would ask, before this lawsuit, sellers, and I only know California, always had the option to offer a compensation. That there was nothing set in stone. There was no law about compensation.
Right.
6% used to be common, but that was when it was going out in 1988 when I started. 5% became more common, but there's plenty of discount brokerages that would be less. So it seems like in California, we did so much disclosures. If that case was brought in California versus Missouri, was Missouri the same as California? That case was going to be one no matter where it was tried?
I'm not sure that case would have been won no matter where it was tried. And so much in the litigation world depends on location. It depends on who is presiding over the particular case. So I'm going to try and be brief here, but there's two legal theories when it comes to antitrust law. One theory is called the per se law, which means all you have to establish is that there was an agreement and that the agreement was between or among competitors. And as soon as you do that, there's a violation, regardless of whether it's harmful or helpful to the industry. It doesn't matter. The theory per se says you're just not allowed to have any kind of agreement with competitors.
Hmm.
The second theory is called a rule of reason, which says even if there is an agreement, now you look to the effect of that agreement. Is it helpful or is it harmful to consumers, right? Doesn't matter whether it's helpful or harmful to the parties to the agreement. What matters is it helpful or harmful to the consumers at large? And the judge in this case in Missouri instructed the jury, you are going to follow the per se rule. So we're not going to look at the effects of this MLS rule that says listing brokers need to offer cooperation to buyer's brokers. We're just going to say, is there an agreement? Yes, the MLS is a contract between all the member brokers. Is the agreement between competitors? Yes, because you know, Mark, in the industry, you compete with all the other agents that are out there that are working for buyers and sellers. So there is an agreement. The agreement is among competitors. Boom, because the judge said, we're going to follow that legal theory. That was kind of the end of the case right there. A different judge may have said, you know, I don't think that theory is right. I think the right theory is the rule of reason theory. The rule of reason really was there's a lot of support for that in the more current legal jurisprudence. But the judge in this case in Missouri said, no, you're in my court. This is the rule you're going to follow, jury.
This is great information. Never knew that. My guest, California Association of Realtors attorney Neil Kalin. I remember many times over the course of the years where I'd be talking with management or brokers and this and that, and it was always, you can't talk to a competitor, you can't discuss commissions with competitors. They were always concerned about avoiding anything antitrust. And
right.
It seems to me that since the MLS didn't say you can't put it in MLS unless you're paying at least 2.5% to the buyer's agent, there was no rule like that. You could have put in a dollar to the buyer's agent. So, or was their opinion that there was just so much momentum that the seller felt like it was obligated, even though he had choices to pick a discount brokerage or go, you know, a different route? Do you know what I'm saying? Is that?
Yeah, Mark, you're absolutely right. NAR never said that what you have to put in has to meet some kind of minimum standard. They just said you could offer something. You could have offered a penny. You could have offered a dollar, right? You could have offered, you know, 0.1% of the property value, right? I think what happened in the case was, and I'm guessing here, Mark, this is purely my guess, is that the plaintiff's attorney probably put some evidence on that said, you know, is it just coincidental that in Missouri, everybody tends to offer the same amount, right? So, yes, everybody, you could have put in a dollar if you wanted to, but that's not what was being done industry-wide, at least in that case in Missouri. And as you said, there was already a change in the practice in California long before, decades before this case was ever followed. There's all sorts of different brokerage models. So just because you could do it one way doesn't mean you had to do it that way. Would that have made a difference? Hard to tell.
Okay. This is a good time to take a break. We've covered the case, the settlement, the DOJ history. My guest, Neil Kalin, California Association of Realtor Attorney. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and then we'll talk about, so what are the ramifications? What's happening now? We have buyer broker agreements that include compensation now. You're a buyer looking for a home, guess what? And there's going to be a law January 2025 that not just limited to Association of Realtors. All agents have to have buyers commit to signing something and potentially paying commission. So we'll talk about the ramifications when we come back. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.